like to now introduce our speaker for tonight, Z.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. Hi, everybody. I'm Z. I'm a compulsive overeater. Okay, come on. Do it for me.
Hi, Z.
Thank you. And I did that because just to adhere to tradition. The program says personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and the Internet. And I just feel like I don't have any personal anonymity with my name, which is, so far that I've been in OA 30 years, unique. Meaning there is nobody else with my name. And it's not an ego thing, it's, you know, but anyway, guess what? It is an ego thing. Because all these famous people are going to be going onto the Internet and listening to me. And so anyway, actually that's in my mind, part of the reason that they wrote that tradition, a large part of the reason, so we wouldn't get all caught up in the ego and this and that. So it's not any, like, stylish, you know, you may call me Alexandra now. So anyway, hello, and I want to thank John for asking me today, and congratulations to the chip person, and happy birthday, Rachel. I'm extremely grateful to be a member of Overeaters Anonymous. If I don't eat 1 second at a time in about 3 weeks' time, I will have 26 years of back-to-back abstinence. And as our good friend Carol always says, you like to applaud for God. And then I heard somebody add to that, to this morning, you like to applaud for the food, because it was the food that got me to hit bottom and keeps me here today. The painful, pitiful, and incomprehensible demoralization, that is what I credit with 26 years or one day of abstinence. And I'm maintaining about a 45-pound weight loss. I like to give those statistics, although it's really more dramatic if you tell this really gory before story and then you hit them with the 26 years, then you really get applause. Not that I've been analyzing speakerdom in 30 years of OA, you know. I have. Anyway, where do I begin? No instructions, huh? Oh, I know what I was thinking about. When I led here, it was the last time. It was 5 years ago, and it was about 30 days after I'd gotten married for the first time at age 44. So I talked a lot about that. And guess what? It's 5 years later, and I'm still married. And that, for a compulsive overeater, I'm pretty sure a lot of you can relate to that. You know, when I got married, I thought it was a miracle of mankind, you know, and now I realize what a miracle it is to still be married. And, you know, this is kind of a good topic for me because, although it's not per se part of OA, you know, those feelings of not lovable, not desirable, who would ever want to stay in the same room for me, you know, the same house with me, you know, and this man asked me to spend the rest of his life with him, and he's completely whacked, no. And so, I don't know, and you know, I talk a lot, when I got here and I would go to these great meetings and such, they would talk about having our dreams come true, and they would say things like, you know, you'll dream new dreams, and also it just, you know, it, I think that being able to continue on in an intimate relationship, you know, I mean, this program, we have all those feelings, like I said, of self-hatred, and I'm no good, and I'm a freak of nature, and so the program is really responsible for everything in my life, including the 5 years of marriage, and of course, we have our ups and downs like everyone does, but he's been good lately, so no. Another thing I wanted to mention, because I was thinking about it, is that I got like kind of nervous before doing this, knowing that it was going to be taped. It would be a different thing if it just wasn't being taped, but you know, and it kind of like got to my head, you know, and like I was kidding before, famous people are, you know, people all over the world are going to hear it, and I have to tell you one really good story. Somebody called me within this last year, and she said, I'm so grateful. I have to tell you that she works at one of the big studios in town, okay, she said, and there I was, like, listening to you on my iPod at this big studio, and that just went right to my head, okay. So, you know, and the things that have been so core that were taught to me here is that it is all about my ego and that I have to have a continual reduction of the ego. And I tell you what, it started with the food, of course. And I try to really continue today, I've been saying this a lot, to keep telling on myself. You know, I need to just keep telling on myself. And in terms of the taping and of all of this and everything, you know, I'm not up here at any meeting when I do get asked the privilege of leading a meeting. I am not up there to impress. You know, I'm up here to expose myself and to tell my secrets. I'm sick as I'm secret. And to continue to be one of. It's all in that, you know, ego thing. And, of course, when I got here, I had to be on the top of the heap or I was, you know, the worst person in the room. And it's, you know, I love that idea of, you know, oh, you call your sponsor or whomever, and, you know, I feel so bad. I'm into such so much self-hatred, and I'm no good. And, you know, and the answer to that is it doesn't matter. Well, I'm going to screw this up. But the problem isn't that you're thinking badly of yourself. The problem is that you're thinking of yourself. You know, so anyway, well, I have a lot of time. Oh, do I have a timer, by the way? Okay, thanks. Because what I'd really love to do is since I have 40 minutes, is save the last 10 minutes for Q&A, because that keeps me honest, too. There's, you know. So I will go back and do my history. And can I see a show of hands of people who have been in OA, not abstinent right now, but been in OA less than a year? Okay, awesome. Okay, great. So my story with food is that I was a really like a complete normie physically and with food up until the age of about 11 or 12. I was skinny. I'm a small person. I would eat when I was full. And this is something that just cracks me up. I mean, I would eat until I was satisfied and full. And just cracks me up because that is so long gone. And having that normal, what do you call it, like a internal thermostat with the food. Oh, I've had enough. I feel so stuck, you know. My friend Helen and I joke all the time about rich foods and stuff. And, like, we'll be at a deli or something and look at that elaborate dessert case in the front. And she'll go to me, do you want a cookie? And I go, it looks too rich, you know. Or I'll go, well, if we split it, because, you know, I can't eat a whole cookie. And, you know, it's like, there's never enough, you know. They say that one bite is too many, and and a million is never enough. And so, you know, I have a hollow leg for food. I have a hollow leg for praise and attention. But I really have to say today that as far as that praise and attention thing, because I've talked about that a lot in OA, it is so much better. I don't crave it. I think that part of that is a function of age. Like, maybe I just don't even want to work that hard anymore. So I was a skinny kid, but I had all the internal characteristics of being a compulsive overeater. I took everything personally. I thought the world was looking at me. I was so sensitive, and people used to tell me that, and I thought that was a good thing to be, you know. And then I was like, had a deep soul, and I was a feeling person, and of course I came to find out it was huge downfall, and that continues today. But I get to work on it, and it is much better. So I had all of those things completely self-centered. Did not understand the word selfish in the big book when I got here. Just didn't get it at all. But now, of course, in retrospect, I realize I was. And what I do understand, a word I like almost better, is self-centered. I'm centered on myself all the time, you know, all then, all the time. And that's an extremely painful place to be. That's what I learned here. That's not what I expected to learn, any of that stuff. I'm obviously jumping around quite a bit, but the greatest antidote for me to pain, any kind of emotional or spiritual pain, is to pick up the phone and call somebody else and talk to somebody else. I got to tell you, too, diversion is just any kind of diversion, get out of my head, is really good, which is why, you know, just sometimes the actions here. Put the chairs away, you know, even just the physical stuff, which I really got into in the beginning. So, but anyway, at the age of 12 or so, I was studying ballet, and it very much linked for me because I became obsessed with my body and my weight and with dieting and with food. And my teacher just absolutely adored me when I was so, so skinny. And the minute I hit puberty and gained about 4 pounds, then he started in because dancers had to be, like, underweight. You know, it's not necessarily that way anymore, but it was back then. And, of course, I wanted to please him like crazy, and so I started the cycle of dieting and really binging pretty much from the beginning. Another reason I like to talk about that is because he was also a maniac and used to literally hit us, and sometimes not with his hand necessarily, but with this wooden peg that he would count out the time, a wooden dowel, and then he'd come over, and if our hip was up or, you know, whatever, he'd swat us with it. And girls had welts that they went to the doctor and documented and this and that. And you know what? I mean, I just thrived under that kind of a situation. You know why? Because I just figured out, like, you know, that like hyper-vigilant, you know, ego, whatever I can do to protect myself. But beyond protection, it was more like, this is a man that if you get his praise, man, you're really good. And, you know, I've never said that at a meeting, but I'm just realizing that. And I've always been good at figuring out what you want out of me. What does that say? And instead of being myself, because I needed you to tell me that I was okay. And so he rarely hit me. And another reason why I have to be totally honest, I came to realize years later, is that I was one of the girls there who had a father. A lot of the other girls, they just had a family of single moms. But I had a dad who could come and hit him back. And so anyway, but I really, man, my disease blossomed because I just got into figuring out how to please him at any price, and got into the cycle of dieting and binging. And it just snowballed from there. I quit ballet at the age of 15 or 16 and went nuts with ego and identity. I thought I was a dancer and was meaningless without that. Again, problem with the ego. And oh, I was thinking of this other phrase that I love. You're that piece of crap around which the world revolves, right? So anyway, and I did a bunch of geographics at this point in my life. I went from L.A. to first year of college in New York. Then that was all wrong. The college was wrong for me. So I went back to L.A., to Santa Barbara, to a real rah-rah all-American college for one quarter. Couldn't last. Did some serious dieting with my roommate and binging my guts out. Came back to L.A., went back to ballet full-time, and then went to Pittsburgh to get into ballet company. Didn't last long. Went to New York again, and then finally, always thinking, you know, that the outsides were going to fix me. And even at this point, I was in O.A., but I want to tell one story about that. To get into this ballet company in Pittsburgh, my teacher looked at me one day. She'd gotten a job there, and she says, if you lose 20 pounds, I'll get you into the company in Pittsburgh. So I went on pre-digested liquid protein, and which was a thing in the 80s, and for those who are old enough, and 80 seems like yesterday, but you didn't eat. You just took like 4 tablespoons, 3-4 times a day of this stuff, which is probably just pure protein or something. And another thing, I've been telling this story for like 26 years. It occurred to me like 6 months ago, who pre-digested that? Like, what does that mean? So I'm sure it was all a scam. But, of course, I did it. So I went on this stuff, and I fasted literally for like 2.5 weeks straight, and then the weight dropped off, as you might imagine, and I flew to Pittsburgh, but with a little weekend play trip in New York prior to arriving there, and guess what I did? In, you know, but 4 days, I put on enough weight to blow it, and I arrive in Pittsburgh, and I'm in my audition, and blah, 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 and then the director of this ballet company takes me into her office, and she says, I'm sorry, but we're not running a spa for fat dancers. And so, and I have to tell you, you know, that those oohs and ahs, you know, are part of the healing that goes on here over the years. I always feel so good when I hear that. And, of course, 2-3 guesses on what I did the moment after that meeting ended. And I was in OA at that point. I was in for a full year. But I really believe I had no concept of being powerless over food. So I did take my big book down from the shelf where it was gathering dust that night and looked at step one, and it was like this dawning enlightenment. Oh, I don't have any power over food, you know. But I still could not get abstinent after that point. And, of course, that was the pinnacle of a lifelong dream, right? I should skip back just a minute and say that when I came to OA the first time, I think I was 18, and what really got me was people lost their weight and kept it off. I was sold when I heard that, and they have sparkle in their eye and had been depressed like me. And, you know, I kind of skimmed over this part, but I had gotten just horribly depressed, and like all of us, I'm no different, and anxious, and I'd written a suicide note at age 16, and I was one of those kinds that never would have done it, you know, but miserable, nowhere to turn, probably overly dramatic, for sure, but anyway, all that good stuff that goes along with it. The things seemed unacceptable to me when I got here was the higher power and the concept of powerlessness, and that I was an addict and that I had the disease and that I would have it one day at a time for the rest of my life. These were just seemed unacceptable to me. But I wanted what they had more than the objections, and I think OA makes it really easy on you. You know, it says you don't have to accept any of this stuff. You don't have to pay for it, you know, nothing. Just keep coming back and keep an open mind. So anyway, that's what I did, and then blah, 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 flying to Pittsburgh, blah, blah, blah. One Friday night, I had a binge, and I hope today that it's my last binge. What did I hear this morning at a meeting? I guess people were just talking about the idea that it's so much harder to get abstinent than it is to stay abstinent. And so I had this binge, and it was a mild binge, and I like to say if you're waiting, you know, to get abstinent for the worst binge you've ever had, you know, that might not be the picture. This was one of the mildest ones I ever had, but something happened inside. And part of it was pure vanity, which makes perfect sense to me. I had lost some weight prior to that, and I was now binging daily, and I was afraid I was going to gain all my weight back. So what better motivation for a compulsive overeater? I went to this gigantic meeting the next day that was just like glowing and fantastic. I also want to share a bit of history here. It was the podium like this, and in order to share at this meeting, there was a sign right here on the front of the podium that said you had to have 30 days of abstinence, and I want to hear your gasp, you had to be 10 pounds within your goal weight. And I loved it. Thank you. You know, and I say that like if I tried to bring that back today, I'd be lynched. And I'm sad about that. I think OA has really changed. But wait, ooh, who put the soapbox underneath me? I think we have taken, you know, it's like it's a three-legged stool here. And this is what I was taught from the beginning. It's physical, emotional, and spiritual. And if you take away one of the legs, it's all going to fall down. And I feel in the last several years that the physical has been, you know, just kind of tossed aside. And if you say the words goal weight at a meeting, you know, you get dirty looks. And I do have people who don't like me here. And and I've had to put principles before personalities and my ego and my desire to be liked by everyone because to me it's a life and death program. And I am not saying that I shove anything down people's throats. Everything, if I object to something, it goes to group conscience and we take a vote. However, I can't keep my mouth shut about certain things because it's a life and death program and it's not just my life, but it's the newcomer coming in. I'll give you an example because I've now gone out on a limb. I was secretary of a newcomer's meeting, and you're going to hate me for saying this, but you know what? That's okay too. I said that already. Okay, repeating myself. And after about 6 months or a year, I can't remember how long, another secretary came in. And there are only two newcomers meetings a week in the Los Angeles area now. And history again, when I came in, there were a lot more. And they used to be giant. I mean, things have changed. Everything's changed. Let's face it, meetings used to be 2 years, 2 years long, 2 hours long as well, most majority. So this meeting, and this happened probably 2 years ago. The new secretary comes in and repeatedly was getting someone who was obese to lead the newcomers meeting. And I spoke up. And I said, could we have a group conscience, and could we make a little by law rule in this meeting that the leaders at the newcomers meeting should be at goal weight or at healthy weight? And I was voted down 7-1, you know. And again, I mean, if I just go back to the AA principles, which I was raised on, it's that kind of, and you know what, it's not, I mean, we're all at different places. We're, you know, and I can't judge. I'm really good at judging. I will cop to that. I'm feeling superior to other people. I cop to that. But at the same time, I was just saying, one little meeting a week, 30 minutes, just the leader, you know. I'm not saying they got to be skinny, you know. I'm just saying, just for this meeting, please, no. So this is, frankly, I'm just going to say it, saddens me, you know, and I like to speak about it because, again, it's a life and death thing. And and that's what the newcomer sees when they come in. And to my mind, the reason that we're not as big, because we used to have 100 meetings a week in L.A., we now have 60, it's part of this is why people don't want what we have. So, okay. I lost the train of thought there, but I was talking about God and coming into the program and that night, right? So and then the next morning, and what I did differently that next morning after that binge was ask someone to sponsor me who really intimidated me, and someone who was really working the program hard and quoting the big book and who I had been hiding from the previous kind of 4 years in OA. And everything changed that day. She basically said, here's the certain things that you have to do or we won't work together. And they were really very simple. It was probably four meetings a week. I had to get a service commitment at a meeting. I had to read four pages of the 12 and 12 every night or the big book. Blah, blah, blah. But the point was I had reached a point where I was willing to not argue anymore and to tweak it and to work it to fit me. And if I were to have to distill surrender, you know, it's such a huge, complicated, hard-to-understand concept, it would be follow, you know, if I had to distill it down, it would be follow your sponsor's directions. And, you know, and so it was a real gift that at that time she was in AA as well as OA, and so she said you have to go to at least one AA meeting a week in addition. And I just learned a great deal that I glommed onto at that point from the AA meetings. And one of them was this emphasis on just don't take that first drink. You know, just don't take that first bite. And with all our pamphlets, I sound like a real bleeding deacon, and but, you know, they used to say at the top, before you take that first bite, call. And so it was all about staying abstinent in that first bite. And I learned, it was drilled into me that abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. And I like to say that today. And if I lose everything if I don't make that my priority. And I also learned in the beginning to be one of the main things for me was how to be average. And that was appalling to me. You know, like in those ballet days and such, I was going to be one of the best, greatest dancers in the world that ever lived. That was the ego and such. And I couldn't have those kinds of expectations and standards and still abstain. As far as the food goes, my sponsor said, three meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, flour, and starch. Now, again, this was 26 years ago, and maybe it's not the healthiest thing in the world not to have any kind of grain or starch or anything like that, but we didn't know that back then. And as a friend of mine says, if my sponsor had said, eat blue food, I'd say, how many ounces, you know. So I just did it. And, you know, I get this question, how much time do I have left, by the way?
About seven minutes before you get your
10. Okay, cool, thank you. I get this question a lot today, what's a food plan, what's abstinence, what do I eat, how do I eat, this and that. And the way that I answer it is, and I heard someone today just say the greatest thing, first, identify your alcoholic foods, you know, those. And I heard another person last week say the funniest thing. She says she kind of defines what to eat and what not to eat around the foods that talk to her. And she said, you know, she can, if she goes and tries to eat two cookies as dessert, you know, those cookies are talking to her all night long. And if she eats Brussels sprouts, not a word. So, that was the idea about no sugar, flour, and starch, is that flour or, you know, any kind of grain or any even potato turns into sugar in our system, and we're addicted to sugar, so we don't eat any of it. And I didn't eat any, I didn't have a slice of bread or any of that for a full year, and then I slowly brought it back. Anyway, you know, what it looked like for me mostly, I would say, and it's interesting, someone shared earlier about coming to really feel that God was going to take care of all aspects of her life. And I have to say that, would you sponsor me or she left? today I believe in higher power. I call it God. And I just realized recently that some days I understand he, she, it really well, and other days I don't at all. But I would have to say that God, this higher power concept for me has been wrapped in, God is my, I'm not getting this right, but it's people wrapped in skin, you know, like, I need God with skin on him, if you know what I mean. And I use the phone a lot. And that's what I mean. I rely on the people in OA. I know, you know, sponsors can have clay feet. People won't be there. I'm big into prayer, all this stuff. But that's how I came to understand that higher power. And I can totally lose faith. Totally, totally. And I've had lots of interesting experiences, like doing great on a job and then getting fired, not understanding it at all. 4 months after I married my husband, he was diagnosed with bladder cancer. He's great today. They removed his bladder. We had a bye-bye bladder party. Laughter. It's the 14th step. And so he is really great. But there have been these shocking things, you know, and it's interesting. I want to tell on myself. My brother killed himself in 1996. My husband was diagnosed with cancer. But, you know, the things that got me even way worse than anything that happened to anyone else is the things that happened to me when I got fired. Like, fired? Kind of, so what? But I was more traumatized over that, you know. And, again, I just like to keep telling on myself, because for one thing, I got a lot of pats on the back, in both of those instances, brother and husband, you know, you're so good, you're so strong, or, you know, and I can get off on that. And so it's just all good. Keep telling my secrets. Remember, Michael L. says, he gets up at the podium and he says, what don't I want to talk about today? And then he'll proceed to talk about that. Anyway, let's see, where was I? Oh, yeah, the concept of a higher power. And so, and the other thing, the way that I've come to understand a power greater than myself is through action. You know, they say in the big book, action is the magic word. So I got really heavily into that in the beginning, and it would make me feel like $1 million to give someone a ride home. Or, you know, I began to find that taking those, I guess they say today, like those esteemable actions, that builds my esteem inside and my dignity. Whereas I could read and read and affirm and affirm and affirm, and it does nothing for me in my head. So there's that. And as I said, I learned to be average, and you know, I guess the theme really is all about ego and such. Also, something that grabbed my attention when I got here, people not only were keeping their weight off, but they were talking about they were no longer obsessed with food. And that just seemed beyond imagination. My craving, I used to think, was worse than all of yours, which is why it took me 4 years to get abstinent. You know, well, they felt like I did, you know, when you sit there in meetings and feel like that. And, you know, it was removed. The first year, I used to eat dinner with the phone on the table, and I still mourn as the food disappears from the dinner plate, you know. But it was really, really hard in the beginning, so I put the phone right there. But I just kept very, very active. I pulled all my covers. I went to huge meetings. I spoke at podiums. And what happened, of course, is that then the love connections, you know, if you're back, I was over anonymous in a way, and then I jumped in with both feet, and that's what changed everything. And I hated it. I didn't want to do it. But I was also told at AA meetings, you know, you thank the speaker no matter what. And that's where I learned it's not about you. It's not about you, you know. And it's about that other person. Oh, there's another person in the room, you know. And which makes me think of the St. Francis prayer, which really encapsulates it for me. You know, let me love rather than to be loved. Let me try to understand. And that can be dicey because I can overdo anything. I'm a black and white person, you know, and I don't want to be a doormat at the same time. So, you know, nothing is really that easy. They say it's a very simple program and there can be challenges. But it does become so much easier. Someone was asking me tonight, what is abstinence and a food plan? And I said, well, we usually write our food down the night before, and then we call our sponsor. And it started to sound like very regimented and everything. And I remember it because I don't do that anymore. I did it for years and years. I don't do that anymore. I just wing it, baby, because I got it down. It wasn't the regiment of writing it down. It was that I got to talk to someone who loved me every single morning. And it wasn't even I felt like, oh, I'm obligated to eat these foods today because I told someone. It was more like this constant someone was holding my hand. And that's what worked for me. So it was the love. Let me try to bring it up. I'm glad we're doing questions because that will be great. But today, what my program looks like today. I'm grateful for the ninth step because I get to continue to make amends when I go wrong, you know. I just recently started a job that's 20 miles away. You can imagine the traffic is hell. And so I go to about 2 meetings a week, I'd say 1 or 2. But in order to stay sane on that commute, I'm on the cell phone and I'm sponsoring a lot more. I don't know if that it's more than ever, but it's consistent, and I'm really grateful for that. I used to go to 7 to 9 meetings in the beginning. Don't do that anymore. But I have very people now who've become dear friends. It's so hard in the beginning when you don't know anyone, and you don't know how much joy it gives someone when you make that phone call, you know, on the other end of the line, that phone feels like it's 100 pounds. But today it's just become part of my life, like my favorite, most comfortable pair of jeans. My best friends are in OA, and I can speak to them, you know, throughout the day, and it doesn't feel like I am taking a program action. You know, it's just a way of life. And there was a meeting this morning called the Spiritual Maintainers, and the big book says that it's not about maintaining our spiritual condition; it's about enlarging it, and that we are at risk of eating again if we don't continue to enlarge our spiritual condition. So, don't ask me how you do that. All I know is that I still have a tremendous hunger for that solace that I feel I just recently, and the big book also says to go to outside literature, you know, and be quick to see where various religions and spiritual people are right. So, frankly, lately I've gotten into yoga, and there's a lot of poets that they somehow are drawn into the classes, and it's just killer. So I'll use the internet, I'll email my friend. The recent poems, very, very spiritual, are prayers and things like that. And so, as I said, it's just become a way of life. Extremely grateful. I almost never weigh myself because the food is not an issue. I mean, sometimes it's an issue too, but it's just become easy, and I just like to share that so people know the promise is here. I think I'm winding it down. I'm just going to say thank you and open it up to questions.
Hi, I'm Jerry, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jerry.
Thank you very much. I think there's a lot of courage to say some of the things that you said. The experience making the hope is outstanding. My question is, to enrich a spiritual life and to place principles above personalities, how do those two mix for you?
I'm going to repeat the question is to continue to enlarge your spiritual life and continue to put principles before personality. How do they work together? Is that right? Yeah. They're, to me, exactly the same thing, because those principles of honesty and courage that it took to, for instance, raise that vote at that meeting are as spiritual as they come. Those are spiritual principles, and they are embedded in our 12 steps. And the Big Book says that this is essentially a spiritual program. And for those who don't know, that there is one particular principle for each of the steps. I haven't always sort of adhered to that, but I think courage is one of them. And service, that's the other thing, is that I'm just very... You know, I want the program to be there and to be strong for me and for the newcomers. So in a way, and because of the reduction of ego and that I don't need it so much anymore, that to have everyone love me, it doesn't seem like such a hard effort to go out and do things that people may not like me. Thank you.
Thank you. How did you work or continue to work the 6 and 7?
How do I continue to work the 6 and 7 step? Thanks. That's a great question. Those are hard for me. I think, for one thing, I continue to write, and that's very closely tied to that. Recently I did some writing and then read it to someone, identified all my defects, my part. And then this is what I love to do. I literally get out my Big Book, open it up, have my writing right there, get on my knees, and read the 7 step aloud out of the Big Book. 7 step says, entirely ready, and that's 6. And then I have to read it because I'm on the spot. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. I'm thinking of something else, but... Anyway, I think that's basically how. Pain, it used to be a lot of pain had to motivate me to ask God to remove a character defect. It doesn't have to be that bad anymore, but usually it's something that I bump up against and ask God. And I think, too, after, here's what's changed along those lines, and I'm glad you asked that because I think about this a lot, is that after 25 years, 1 second at a time, God-given abstinence, it's not me doing it, I've come to realize that it's not about erasing all of your defects and having a clean slate. And I think that I really, truly believed that in the beginning, that I'll just iron them out, and after all, they caused me so much pain. And now, I mean, friggin' A, after asking for 25 years for God to remove these defects and they're not gone, it must be God's will that I still have some of them. Oh, that's it. It's a 7-step prayer that says, God, please remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Now, I figure that some of my defects must be very useful to God. It sounds funny, but it's dead. says, how can I understand when the newcomer calls and says, I'm being eaten up with my envy of this chick at work, you know? And I go, I can totally relate, and here's what I did. So, and on the other side of that is I'm trying to be more and more gentle with myself, and that is this dawning awareness that, you know, I am full of mistakes, I'm full of some of these quote-unquote defects, and let's, you know, just hug them and make a friend out of them. Well, that's another thing I heard. Father Terry, I think it was, that he said, make a friend of your character defect. And to me, I'm going on, it's a long answer, but that's directly related to the food. What never worked for me was fighting the food. I get in the ring with the food, I lost. And I will lose if I try to go there again. And in a way, it's the exact same thing with that my character defect or any problem in life. Headlong assault of the self-will doesn't go anywhere. So it begins with just that acceptance. Because I'm powerless. I don't have the power. Higher power does. Thanks.
You mentioned earlier taking a newcomer and going over the alcoholic foods. Could you give a quick rundown of, like, when you get a new sponsee, the kinds of things you do to sort of, especially ones that are really having trouble with food, get, you know, what kinds of things do you have them do?
Okay, that's the first thing we identify, and I have them write it down, the foods you can't just eat one of, and then we create, okay, so what do you eat? And then I ask them to go to, like, a minimum of 3 meetings a week and 1 AA meeting a week. I reinforce what was told to me, talk to the newcomers. Try to talk to a newcomer at every single meeting. Take numbers, even if you have just one day. You know, it doesn't matter. Even if you're binging, it doesn't matter because you're practicing that muscle of getting out of yourself. And then we methodically start going through the 12 steps. And I usually work out of, well, most of the time I've done it through the AA 12 and 12. I'm more and more going to the big book as well now. Another thing, controversial, I like to tell, this is bad, okay, for me, I do not read the OA literature. Pamphlets, yet. But if someone wants to work the steps through the OA literature, I can't work with them. To me, this sounds like the Pope and the Catholic Church, but there's one answer, and it's in the Big Book and the AA literature. And I'm not ready to risk my recovery on something that's not proven. AA Big Book is proven. I've read a lot of those books, and you know, and I'm not saying I'm right. but after all, to honestly give my experience, I have no experience getting abstinent and staying abstinent with those books. So I can't give it away. It says in the Big Book, you cannot give away what you don't have. So I don't have experience with that, and I'm not willing to risk it by going to something else. So that's basically, I think, I answered it. One short one.
Well, hope it's short. were you skeptical at all when you first started the program?
Totally. In every way. Totally. Didn't think I was an overeater. Didn't think I was like those people. Didn't want to do the God thing. Wasn't sure it worked. Didn't like the people. Didn't like the hugging. All of that. So, yeah. Run, you know, grab it by the hand, Mr. Skeptical. And bring them with you to the meetings. Okay, thank you very much.